What up, y'all? You're listening to Sports Talk with Trop, and I'm your host, Katie Trop. Well, Tyrese Halliburton does it again. He hit another game-winning shot and broke the hearts of yet another team, and this time around, it was the Oklahoma City Thunder. This guy has been the most clutch player, hands down, in the playoffs every single round. And y'all better look out for the Indiana Pacers because, the Oklahoma City Thunder are the better team. But the Indiana Pacers, they just don't give a fuck. And the way they started out this series is the way they have been playing every single series so far. So Oklahoma City better not look past them. Oklahoma City pretty much dominated this game from start to finish last night. All the way up until about about 3-ish minutes, Indiana started to make a run. They started to get within 4 points, and they just were starting to hover around there. And then all of a sudden, they were playing some great defense as well, which is what they do. They just lock it down. And they let SGA do his thing. I mean, SGA was making some crazy shots last night. He ended up with 38 points himself. Indiana, they just played lockdown defense all the way till the bitter end, blocked a shot from the Oklahoma City Thunder to try and go up even further on them. And Halliburton drives down the court with about 7 seconds left to go. He just puts up a shot, knocks it down, and only 0.3 seconds are left on the clock, and that is not enough time for you to get a shot off. And Indiana got the game one win, 111-110. Like I said, the great defense, but it's basically the theme of the playoffs for the Indiana Pacers, and that is every starter was in double figures, and they all just like played that great lockdown defense all the way till the bitter end and really just kept grinding all the way until they got the win. So Indiana broke hearts yet again. Game two is going to be Sunday, like I said, Indiana is up 1-0 on the Oklahoma City Thunder. All right, and since it is the NBA Finals, how about we recap what I thought the season was going to be like for the NBA and how I predicted it. Let's just go ahead and see who the 8 teams are that I picked to win the West, the East, and then I'll do the Western Conference Finals, Eastern Conference Finals, and the Finals, and who I ultimately ended up with. So for the Western Conference, I had the number one overall seed being the Dallas Mavericks, but that's because I thought Luka Doncic was still going to be a Dallas Maverick, but that didn't happen. Number two, I had the Denver Nuggets. Number three, the Los Angeles Lakers. Number four, the New Orleans Pelicans. That didn't happen. Number five, the Oklahoma City Thunder. Number six, the Phoenix Suns. Number seven, the Minnesota Timberwolves. And number eight, the Memphis Grizzlies. Then in the Eastern Conference, the number one overall seed I had was the Boston Celtics. That did happen. Number two, the Indiana Pacers. So obviously, I wasn't looking past them. Number three, the Miami Heat. Number four, the New York Knicks. Number five, the Philadelphia 76ers. Number six, the Milwaukee Bucks. Number seven, the Cleveland Cavaliers. And number eight seed I had is the Orlando Magic. My Western Conference Finals matchup I had was the Dallas Mavericks versus the Los Angeles Lakers, which is kind of funny since Luka is now a Laker. But I was pretty far off from that one regardless. And then the Eastern Conference Finals matchup I had was the Boston Celtics versus the New York Knicks. I was half right about that matchup. My NBA Finals matchup I had as the Dallas Mavericks versus the New York Knicks, which wasn't too far off. Like I said, I mean, I was expecting Luka to be a Dallas Maverick, as was everybody else. And then, of course, the Knicks actually played pretty well this year. And then my champs, I actually had the Dallas Mavericks. So, they did the complete opposite. But I thank them for handing over Luka to the Lakers. So moving on to baseball and the week that was, we had a crazy series between the Mets and the Dodgers. I think I'll be pretty much talking about every one of those games from this week. But let's go ahead and start off with the Detroit Tigers and the Chicago White Sox on Monday night. The Tigers just smashed the White Sox 13-1. But it was Kerry Carpenter who had a huge night. He had 3 home runs for the Detroit Tigers with 5 RBI, and he went 3-for-5, so all 3 of his hits were home runs. But then speaking of the New York Mets and the Los Angeles Dodgers, their first game in this matchup was on Monday, and it was a back-and-forth affair. It actually went into extra innings, went to the 10th inning, and the Mets ended up getting the walk-off win 4-3. And Lindor, Alonso, Alvarez, they all had big games. Otani also had a home run. So it was just this series between the Mets and the Dodgers, it really has just been back and forth every single game. And that was just how it started off, with a 10th inning win by the New York Mets. Then on Tuesday, the Chicago Cubs, they continued their just offensive tear of the season. They beat the Nationals 8-3. PCA actually became the fourth fastest player to 15 home runs and 20 stolen bases in a season. So this guy just keeps getting hotter, having an electric season and just being a great player for the Chicago Cubs. And then Bush, their first baseman, he's been having a phenomenal season as well. He went 3-for-4 with a home run and 3 RBI on the night. Then Tuesday, as I said, we're going to keep talking about this Dodgers-Mets matchup because this one was also a back-and-forth affair. Actually ended in the 10th inning, but this time it was a little bit different. Actually ended up with the Dodgers getting the win 6-5. Max Muncy, he had 2 home runs in this one, and one of the home runs was actually tie it up in the 9th inning. But Freddie Freeman was the one who had the walk-off double in the 10th inning for the Dodgers. Then on Wednesday, we haven't been talking a lot about the Colorado Rockies this year because they've been so terrible, but they actually did something for the first time they haven't done since last May, and that is actually get a sweep in a series. They were able to sweep the Florida Marlins. They won the game 3-2 on Wednesday. The last time they had a sweep was May 15th of 2024, so that's pretty pathetic. But Kyle Freeland pitched a pretty solid game with 6.1 innings pitched. As a matter of fact, they couldn't even score on him. The Marlins ended up getting the 2 scores when he was taken out of the game, but he also had 4 strikeouts as well. And then on Thursday, once again, getting back to this Dodgers-Mets game, once again, back and forth. But this time, the Dodgers were able to get the game 6-5. Pete Alonso had a huge game for the Mets. He went 3-for-4 with a home run and 2 RBI. And Conforto, who actually used to be a Met, ended up with the game-winning run on in this game for the Dodgers, who won 6-5. And then Arizona Diamondbacks versus the Atlanta Braves. Both of these teams have had such up and down roller coaster seasons. They pretty much mirror each other at this point. But Arizona did something that nobody expected them to do. And that was they were down in the 9th inning, 10-4, with only 1 out to go. And they walk up, and all of a sudden, Gurriel hits a home run. Thomas hits a home run. Marte gets a base hit. Vargas gets a base hit. And then all of a sudden, Eugenio Suarez walks up for the game-winning double. And the Arizona Diamondbacks walk away with the win 11-10, which everybody thought the Braves were going to get. But that has been a seesaw season for both of these teams, and it obviously was no different in this matchup. All right, moving on to the College Baseball World Series that actually started last week, but, you know, it was the regionals. And so once it gets to the super regionals, that's when I really start getting into it, because the regionals are all those 4 bracket teams and the round robins and all that. But the top 2 seeds are already out of it, which kind of pisses me off, because one of those teams is my Texas Longhorns. They were the number 2 overall seed, and they lost last week. Then Vanderbilt was the number 1 overall seed, and they lost last week. So number 1 and 2 are no longer there. But the national top 16 seeds were number 1 Vanderbilt, number 2 Texas, number 3 Arkansas, number 4 Auburn, number 5 North Carolina, number 6 LSU, number 7 Georgia, number 8 Oregon State, number 9 Florida State, number 10 Ole Miss, number 11 Clemson, number 12 Oregon, 13 Coastal Carolina, 14 Tennessee, 15 UCLA, and 16 Southern Miss. So in the Super Regionals this weekend, the first matchup we have is between Louisville and the U, and I'm going with Louisville in that matchup. Then we have Florida State versus Oregon State. I'm going to go with Florida State in that matchup. Then we have North Carolina versus Arizona. I'm going with Arizona in that matchup. And then Coastal Carolina, who's just had a phenomenal year so far, they are going to be playing Auburn, and I'm going with Coastal Carolina in this one. As a matter of fact, I think Coastal Carolina is going to have a pretty solid run here. They're a really, really stout baseball team. Then we have Utah versus UCLA. I've got UCLA moving on in that matchup. Then we have Murray State versus Duke. I have Murray State moving on in that one. LSU versus West Virginia. I have LSU moving on in that one. And then Tennessee versus Arkansas. I have Tennessee moving on in that one. So then once the Super Regionals are done, it actually gets to the technical Men's College World Series, the first round of it. So I have Louisville versus Florida State. I've got Florida State moving on in that one. Then Arizona versus Coastal Carolina. I have Coastal Carolina moving on in that one. Then UCLA versus Murray State. I have UCLA moving on. And then LSU versus Tennessee. I have LSU moving on. So then I would have Florida State versus Coastal Carolina. And I have Coastal Carolina moving on to the championship game. And then UCLA versus LSU, I have LSU moving on to the championship game. So my championship matchup in the College World Series is Coastal Carolina versus LSU. And even though I do think Coastal Carolina is going to have a nice run here, I think their run is going to come to an end because LSU is a very good baseball team. They've been a very good baseball team for many years. As a matter of fact, they're only a couple years removed from their last national championship. So they should be ready to go in this matchup. And so I have LSU winning the Men's College World Series. A little bit of NFL news trickled through this week. Not really anything shocking, but it actually finally happened, and that is quarterback Aaron Rodgers signed a one-year deal with the Pittsburgh Steelers. It was pretty much rumored that's who he was going to sign with for quite some time, since basically like February. It's just he's apparently had some personal things going on, and so he needed to take care of that, and then he decided to sign right before all of their off-season training programs begin, I think, next week. So he signed up for the year, and I think that makes the Pittsburgh Steelers actually a pretty legit squad at this point. I mean, they still have a lot of work to do on the offensive side, I think. I mean, their offensive line has a lot of questions, and that's not good for Aaron Rodgers. But he does have DK Metcalf out there and Pat Freiermuth, so that should be pretty solid for him. But we'll see what happens with the Pittsburgh Steelers and Aaron Rodgers this season. All right, and moving on to my top five list this week. Just continuing the theme of past players and their playoff moments this week, I decided to do Wilt Chamberlain, which was kind of a funny rabbit hole to dig into because, you know, I've always just respected the shit out of Wilt Chamberlain just because I've, you know, known all of his accomplishments. He's one of the greatest scorers of all time, just an excellent basketball player. But there are a lot of haters out there for Wilt Chamberlain is something that I learned, not just like fan haters, but there were a lot of basketball players who weren't too fond of him, including like teammates of his, like Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. They were not too fond of each other. As a matter of fact, apparently they hated each other all the way until Chamberlain died. So yeah, there weren't that. It was kind of funny to stumble upon all the many players who had not nice things to say about him, and some of them were teammates. But hey, he still had a lot of accomplishments, and I was able to find five of them to rank in this one. So let's start off with five in my top five Wilt Chamberlain playoff moments, beginning with the 1972 NBA Finals, Game 5. This was when he was with the Los Angeles Lakers. They were playing the New York Knicks. This was his second championship and his first with the Los Angeles Lakers. But essentially, he played this Game 5 with a broken hand. He broke it in the previous game, and he was coming into this practice with basically his hands pretty much all bandaged and gauzed up like he was a defensive lineman because he didn't want any painkillers because he felt like that was going to make him play differently. So he ended up still playing and played quite the game. He ended up with 24 points, 29 rebounds, and 8 assists and 8 blocks, so he was still able to do his thing in a Los Angeles Lakers win. Like I said, it was his first championship with the Lakers, his second overall in his career, and it was a win over the Knicks 114-100. Then at number 4 on my top 5 Wilt Chamberlain playoff moments, I have the 1960 Eastern Division Finals, Game 5. What was so standout about this was this was his rookie year, and this is how he stormed into the playoffs against the Boston Celtics, who were obviously the team of this time. But in this particular game, he scored 50 points and 35 rebounds. Yeah, that was his stat line. 50 points, 35 rebounds in his rookie year. And it wasn't a win. This is when he played with the San Francisco Warriors. That's what the Warriors were at the time. 128-107. But they did end up losing this matchup overall between the Celtics, just because obviously the Celtics were the better team. But it was definitely a huge welcome to the NBA moment for Wilt Chamberlain. And we got a front row seat of what was already the beginning of a high-scoring, high-rebounding, just high-stat-line career that he had. Then at number 3 on my top 5 Wilt Chamberlain playoff moments, I have the 1962 Eastern Conference Semifinals, Game 5. And in this one, it's actually, it used to be a record. I don't think it is anymore. Maybe it still is. But it looked like, from my research, that it no longer is the record. But if it is, he started that scene. And he had 56 points and 35 rebounds. So That was a big deal. And, well, actually, he had 35 rebounds in that 1960. Oh, I think it's because it was the Eastern Conference semifinals. I think that's what it was for that particular round. But anyways, they did get the win over the Syracuse Nationals. He was with the Philadelphia Warriors at that time. 121-104, but just a monster stat line and just a monster game overall from Wilt Chamberlain in this one. Then at number two on my top five Wilt Chamberlain playoff moments, I have the 1967 Eastern Division Finals, Game 1. Now, the thing about this game, this was when he was with the Philadelphia 76ers. This was against the Boston Celtics, because if you don't know, the Boston Celtics were basically Wilt Chamberlain's nemesis. They pretty much beat up on him for a long, long time. But this was actually the first time in his career they actually beat them in the playoffs in a series. But the standout stat line in this particular game is he actually had an unofficial quadruple-double. And what I mean by unofficial is blocks weren't counted at this time. So even though his blocks are technically counted now in statistics, officially, it's technically an unofficial quadruple-double. But he ended up scoring 24 points, 32 rebounds, 13 assists, and 12 blocks. So he just had an absolute monster dominating game in which the 76ers got the win 127-112. But the number one overall moment in the top five Wilt Chamberlain playoff moments is 1967 NBA Finals Game 6. Now, I wouldn't say it was his overall best game, but it was actually his first championship he had ever won in his entire career. Took him a while to win one. Actually, one of the things I did see that a lot of people like to call him a choker, and he wasn't really good in the playoffs and blah, blah, blah. So it seems that we still do that into today's day and age. So they've always done it. But this was just he finally got the win. And it was against his old team, the San Francisco Warriors. And he got, like I said, his first championship. And what was big in this particular Game 6 is he had in the final, the fourth quarter was definitely his time. He was actually kind of having a sluggish game, not playing to Wilt Chamberlain's standards. But he was playing great defense on Rick Barry, who was the top player for the Warriors at the time. He ended up with 23 rebounds total in this one, and 8 of those rebounds came in the fourth quarter along with 6 blocks. But just his strong defense in the end there was what really put the 76ers above the Warriors in this matchup, and he finally won his first championship in his entire career. So that is the top five Wilt Chamberlain playoff moments. I'll probably do one more next week. We'll see. Because, the finals could be either over next week or we'll be in, like, game 5 or 6. So we'll still be in the NBA finals. So I'll probably do one more random player from the past in their playoff moments next week. All right, y'all, enjoy the weekend of sports, and I will talk to you fools on Monday.